Dolly Parton died this week, and I surprised myself with how sad I was about it. Now, I grew up with her voice without quite noticing it, because every year when my family piled into our minivan to go cut down our Christmas tree, our soundtrack was Dolly Parton and Kenny Rogers on an old tape, a tape, of Once Upon a Christmas. I eventually came to cherish that album as much as the eggnog milkshakes that we would get on the drive home. And I've always liked her music and her larger-than-life persona, but I came to love Dolly more when my daughter was small, and we signed her up for something called the Imagination Library. And this was Dolly's project, a book in the mail every month, free to any kid whose family wanted one. A woman who grew up with next to nothing herself decided that no child in her hometown, and eventually no child in dozens of countries, should grow up without books in the house. And the more I learned about her, the more there was to love. She supported the LGBTQ+ community for decades, quietly and without making a spectacle of it, back when it could cost her something. And when the pandemic hit, she didn't just take to social media about her concerns. She wrote a check that helped fund vaccine research at Vanderbilt. And Father Jim Martin, the editor-at-large of the Jesuit magazine America, wrote something this week that really resonated with me and what I was feeling. He said that the outpouring of grief over Dolly wasn't really about the rhinestones or the wig collection or even Jolene. It was that people caught glimpses over the decades of something underneath the persona. A woman who could disarm Barbara Walters with a smile and a line like, "It takes a lot of money to look this cheap." And then turn around and quietly fund a child's education or a friend's medical bills, or a vaccine lab without any cameras nearby. Martin's argument was that what the world was mourning underneath the music was holiness. People saw something bright and amazing in both Dolly's sparkle and in her actions, and it spoke to them. I know it spoke to me. And I think that's the same instinct sitting underneath our story of Moses this morning. I mean, a bush and a rhinestone jumpsuit may even have a similar effect in the right light. Because look at what happens in Exodus 3. Moses is 40 years into exile, and he's tending sheep. They're not even his own sheep. They belong to his father-in-law, Jethro, a priest of Midian. Which is an interesting little detail there. He's not a priest of Yahweh, the God of Israel. He tends to a different God altogether. So Moses has married outside of the covenant. He built a whole life on land that has nothing to do with the promise made to Abraham. And he settled into being, for all practical purposes, a Midianite. He's outside his own people. And the name of the mountain he's on doesn't help matters much either. Horeb means desolation, waste ground, the dry place. Moses is standing on a mountain named for having nothing to offer. He's tending someone else's flock, married into someone else's religion, decades removed from anything that looks like a call from the God of his ancestors. And he's not looking for God on this particular day. He's looking for grass, probably, or shade, or a place where his flock at least won't wander off a cliff. But then something catches his eye, a bush that is burning and not consumed. He could have kept walking, probably should have kept walking if he were being responsible. There were sheep to tend after all, and shepherds who stop to gawk at things, they tend to lose their sheep. But he does stop. He turns aside, and he goes and looks. There's a lot of theology packed into that moment. Sure, it's not an argument or a doctrine. Instead, it's an act of attention. And in that moment, it changes everything. Because it is only after Moses turns aside that God finally speaks. The fire is already burning before he notices it. God doesn't just call out to get his attention first, but Moses sees. Moses turns. And then, and only then, God calls out his name out of the bush. The wonder comes first. The word comes second. Now, the Swiss theologian Hans Urs von Balthasar spent a good chunk of his life arguing that theology had lost this order, that we'd gotten used to starting with a proposition to be proved instead of starting with our attention on something. He used to complain that theology had turned into something like a butterfly collection. Everything pinned, everything labeled, filed, dead. His whole project was to undo that. In fact, he wrote an entire 15-volume argument for it, and he structured it on purpose so that beauty came first, before drama, before doctrine, before any of the logic tools theologians like to use. You have to see the form before you can say anything true about it. And he drew a distinction between two kinds of wonder. There's admiration, which is what you feel when you look at a nice view. It's pleasant, but it's forgettable by Tuesday. And then there's something deeper. And here he used a German word that I can't begin to pronounce, but it's closer to being stopped in your tracks by the sheer fact that anything exists at all. Why is there something rather than nothing? Why does this particular bush burn and not burn up? That kind of wonder doesn't lead you to information. It leads you to worship. It leads you to take off your shoes. Or evidently, like this week, it leads multitudes to stop scrolling for one afternoon and sit with something like grief over an 80-year-old country singer they never met because something in her, however she'd have laughed off the word, looked like holiness. Same instinct as Moses. Something catches, and for once, instead of just walking right past, we turn aside. And notice what God says once Moses has stopped and taken off his shoes. I have seen the misery of my people. I have heard their cry. Wonder is not an escape from the world's pain. It's what makes you capable of hearing it in the first place. You don't get to the ethics without going through the beauty first. So here's what I just keep coming back to. God is breaking in all over the place, all the time. In fact, somewhere between here and your car in the parking lot, something ordinary is going to be on fire and not consumed. It might even be sparkling. And the big question is, will you turn aside Will you take notice?